Breathing in, I see my father as a five-year-old boy, fragile, vulnerable. Breathing out, I smile to the five-year-old, fragile, vulnerable as my father. Father, five-year-old, fragile, smiling to father, five-year-old, fragile with compassion. Breathing in, I see my mother as a five-year-old girl, fragile, vulnerable. Breathing out, I smile to my mother as a five-year-old girl, fragile, vulnerable, with compassion. Mother, five-year-old, vulnerable, fragile. Smiling to mother with compassion. Breathing in, I see the wounded child, the vulnerable child, as my father still alive in me. Breathing out, I hold him with compassion and love. Father, as a five-year-old, still alive in me, holding father with compassion. Breathing in, I see the five-year-old girl as my mother still alive in me. Breathing out, I hold, embrace the five-year-old girl with compassion and love. mother as a child, still alive in me, holding mother in me with compassion. Breathing in, I see the healing of Father, Mother, and me in me. Breathing out, I smile to Father, Mother, and myself in me. The healing of Father, Mother, and myself in me. Smiling to the healing of all three of us. Breathing in, I enjoy breathing in, breathing out, I enjoy breathing out. Enjoy breathing in, enjoy breathing out. Good morning, dear brothers and sisters. Today is Sunday, September the 11th, in the year 2011, and we are on our last day of the retreat with the team together. We are one, nurturing our beloved community. We know that the practice of mindfulness can help cultivate love and compassion in us. Without love, without compassion, one cannot be happy. One cannot be a happy person without the initial love and compassion in oneself. Without love and compassion, we are utterly alone, isolated. We cannot relate to other human beings. We cannot relate to other living beings. Even if we are very rich, very powerful, but if there is no love in us, we are utterly alone. We cannot reach out. We cannot relate to anyone. That is why love and compassion is an essential element of happiness. And practicing mindfulness, we can generate love and compassion in ourselves. The Buddha's teaching on true love is very clear and also simple enough for us to understand. We have to look into our love to see whether there are four elements of true love in it. And the first element of true love is maitri, maitri, loving kindness. Maitri comes from the word maitri comes from the word mitra. It means a friend, friend, friendship, brotherhood, sisterhood. Loving kindness is the English word used to translate maitri. And the meaning is that that energy of maitri, that energy of loving kindness, has the power to bring happiness, joy, well-being. And if your love has the element of maitri, and your love can bring happiness to you, to him, to her, to the person you love. The intention to make a person happy is not maitri, is not maitri yet. You have the intention to make him or her happy, but that is only the intention. Sometimes we want to make a person happy, but we make him or her suffer. Like a father who wants to love his son, impose his ideas, his way on his son. He does not know the suffering of the difficulty of his son. So although he has the willingness to love, to make his son happy, but the more he loves, the more he makes his son suffer. So the willingness to make someone happy is not maitri yet. In order to love someone, make him or her happy, you have to understand the suffering, the difficulty of that person. And if you don't understand your own suffering, it's hard to understand his or her suffering. That is why love always begins with yourself. You go home to yourself, not afraid of touching the suffering inside. You listen to it. You get in touch with it. You hold it tenderly because you are a practitioner. You have the energy of mindfulness and concentration that help you to go home to yourself and listen to your own suffering without being overwhelmed by your suffering. That is why the practice of mindful breathing, mindful sitting, mindful walking is very important, because it helps generate the energy of mindfulness and concentration. With that energy, we are no longer afraid of going home and touch the suffering inside. And when we hold our suffering tenderly and look into it, we begin to understand the roots, the nature of our suffering. And understanding of suffering allowed compassion to arise. And the energy of compassion can be very healing. And you feel light, much better, after having understood your own suffering. Your own suffering reflects somehow the suffering of the world. That's why once you have understood your own suffering, it's much easier to understand his suffering, her suffering, and the suffering of the world. And when you are able to see the suffering in him, in her, in the world, you are no longer angry. You don't want to punish anymore because you have seen that there's a lot of suffering in that person. is that you want to help him or her to suffer less. That means compassion is born in your heart. You suffer much less when compassion is in your heart. And when you have compassion in your heart, your way of looking at him, at her, and talking to him or to her, express your compassion. Not only that make you not suffer, but make him, make her not suffer. The way you look, there is mighty compassion, loving kindness and compassion in your eyes. So understanding suffering, your own suffering, and the suffering of the other person is a foundation of the practice. Because understanding brings compassion and love. And whatever you do or you say will be able to help relieve the suffering and offer joy. The second element of true love is compassion. If loving kindness has the power to offer happiness, and compassion has the power to relieve suffering, to remove the suffering, you see the suffering in him or in her, you understand the root of the suffering, and that is why you know how to help remove that suffering in him or in her. Because you know how to do it for yourself, now you know how to do it for him or for her. So mighty loving kindness is the capacity to offer happiness. And maitri and karuna, compassion, has the power to transform, remove suffering. And the two kind of practice are very much linked to each other. If you know how to help remove suffering, you know how to offer happiness. The practice of true love can create happiness and remove suffering. And when we look into our love, and if we recognize the element of loving kindness, maitri, and compassion, karuna, we know that that is true love. But if these two elements do not exist, are very weak, and then we know that we have to practice in order to help these elements to grow. The third element of true love is joy. If there is true love, and joy can be there at every moment for you, for her, for him. If in a relationship you cry all the time, the other person cry all the time, there's no joy, you know that your love is not true love. So joy is something that can tell us whether your love is true love or not. And the last element of true love is equanimity, upeksha. It is inclusiveness. It means inclusiveness. There's no discrimination anymore. In true love, you and him, you and her are one. There's no frontier. You are in him, he is in you. Your suffering is his suffering. His happiness is your happiness. In true love, there is no individual suffering. There is no individual happiness. We share everything. And what you do to make him suffer less, you do it for you. And what you do to make you suffer less, you do it for him, for her. So there is no frontier, no discrimination anymore. So in true love, you cannot say, that's your problem, it's not mine. So the teaching of true love in even the Buddha is very clear. And the practice of mindfulness can help cultivate more of these four elements of true love in our love. Understanding is the foundation of love. Understanding is the other word for love. If you don't understand, you cannot truly love. And mindfulness and concentration are the two kinds of energy that can bring about understanding, insight, wisdom. Mindfulness is smriti, concentration is samadhi, and insight, understanding is prajna. Prajna is wisdom, is insight, is great understanding. Mahaprajna means great understanding. And understanding, insight has the power to liberate. To liberate you from wrong perceptions, wrong views. Wrong views, wrong perceptions are the foundation of fear, anger, discrimination, hate, despair. That is why when we practice mindfulness, concentration, we always attain insight that has the power to set us free, liberate us from fear, anger, separation, and so on. Anything you do to help a person to understand, help remove discrimination, fear, anger, despair in him. So to promote understanding is the most important practice. To promote understanding in yourself and in the world. And you need skillful means in order to help a person to understand. A terrorist is full of anger, fear, the willingness to punish. Now he believed that if he can hurt you, can make you suffer, and then he will get a relief. He will suffer less. And he believed that he is acting in the name of God because you are evil. He is on the side of God. He is doing the work of God. But God never acts on the base of fear and anger and despair. So in order to bring peace to the world, you cannot just kill the terrorist. The terrorist is the victim of misunderstanding. The roots of terrorism is wrong perceptions, wrong views. And if you want to uproot terrorism, you have to help uproot wrong perceptions, wrong views. You should know how to use loving speech and compassionate listening in order to help a person to get rid of his or her wrong views. So terrorists are victims of their wrong views. Their wrong views can come from anywhere. It may have come from us. They might think that we are discriminating against them, against their religion, against their race, They may think that we are trying to destroy them as a civilization, as a culture, as a nation. So that kind of misunderstanding is at the base of all anger and hate. And that's why, in order to eradicate, uproot terrorism, we have to help remove misunderstanding and wrong perceptions. And that cannot be done with the bombs and the guns. And on this day, September 11th, we have to learn that. If we have compassion in us, understanding in us, we know that they also are victims. And we may have said something, we may have done something that make them believe that we want to destroy them as a nation, as a culture, as a religion, as a way of life. The way of talking prove that they think like that. So in order to help uproot terrorism, we have to act in that direction, helping to remove wrong perceptions. And without the capacity to use a loving speech and compassionate listening, we cannot help. And using loving speech and compassionate listening is the practice of true love. The path presented, proposed by the Buddha is a noble eightfold path. And there is the element of mindfulness, concentration and insight. Mindfulness brings concentration. And together with mindfulness, concentration can make a breakthrough and help us to get the understanding, the wisdom that can bring us from the shore of delusion, anger, hate, suffering to the shore of liberation and non-fear. And that is why in the Buddhist teaching there is the expression prajna, mahaprajna, paramita, the great understanding. Mahaprajna is the great understanding. It has the power to bring us to the other shore. Paramita means going to the other shore. We are on the shore of wrong perceptions, fear, hate, despair. And that practice of wisdom, that wisdom that we get thanks to the practice, will carry us from the shore of delusion, hate, separation, to the shore of non-discrimination, non-fear, and happiness. It means that is what it means by Mahaprajna Paramita, the great understanding that can bring us to the other shore. And in Buddhism, from time to time, we use the word right view. Right view means understanding. Right view is one of the eight elements of the noble path. This morning, several hundreds of us received the five mindfulness trainings. We have heard that the five mindfulness trainings represent the path of non-discrimination, reflecting right view. And right view is the outcome of right concentration. And right mindfulness. The five mindfulness trainings are a very concrete way of cultivating right view. And mindfulness helps us to be in touch. Mindfulness is the kind of energy that can bring our mind home to our body, so that we can touch the wonders of life in the here and the now, inside and outside, and can make us happy right away. Because when you bring your mind home to your body, you establish yourself in the here and the now. You are no longer caught by the past or by the future. You are free from the past and from the future. That is why you can get in touch with many conditions of happiness that are already available, more than enough to make you happy. So that is the first function of mindfulness, the art of mindful living. And when you are established in the here and the now, you might get in touch with the suffering that is there in the body, in the mind, in the world. And with the energy of mindfulness, you can embrace, recognize, hold, and bring a relief. You suffer less thanks to the practice of mindfulness. And we have learned also that when you practice concentration like emptiness, aimlessness, signlessness, we can liberate ourselves from afflictions. And mindfulness help bring relief. Concentration help transform and liberate. Because mindfulness and concentration always lead to insight. Insight, right view. And we have learned in this retreat that right view, insight, is not something far away. It can come right away with mindfulness and concentration. It's like the exercise, breathing in, I feel alive. You are alive, but you don't remember. And to be alive is a wonder. To be alive is a miracle. So it takes only 3 seconds to breathe in for you to touch the miracle of being alive. And if you know that you are alive on this planet, that is already inside. And when you breathe out, you can already celebrate life. So insight can come right away. You don't need to practice 8 years or 10 years. One day, a monk, a quite intelligent monk, came to the Buddha and asked him, "Dear teacher, you often speak of right view. What does it mean specifically? What is right view?" The name of the monk is Katyayana Mahakachingyen. And the Buddha said, right view is the kind of understanding that is free from the notion of being and non-being. People in the world are caught either by the notion of being or by the notion of non-being. That is why they cannot see the truth. This sutra is short, but it's very deep. It is available in the Shenzhen book. A theologian, his name is Paul Tillich. He said that God is the foundation of being. The other day we touched the question whether God is a person or not. And we had one of the most beautiful answers: God is not a person, but not less than a person. And now we deal with the problem of being and non-being. When I hear that statement, God is the foundation of being, I ask, if God is the foundation of being, and who will be the foundation of non-being? So that theologian seems to still be caught in the notion of being and non-being. When we speak of creation, we believe that it is possible from non-being, something can come to being. Because to be born means from non-being, you pass into being. You did not exist before. You begin to exist only on the moment of your birth. Suppose we draw a line from left to right, representing time. And we pick up a point here and we call it B, birth. In our way of thinking, to be born means from nothing, you become something. From no one, you become someone. That's our idea of birth. To be born means from the realm of non-being, you pass into the realm of being. So the segment ending with B represents the non-being. And you are born here, and you begin to be, and the segment beginning from B, you call it being. And maybe 100 years later, you come to a point that you call it B, death. And you have some anxiety that you will have to die someday. You don't know whether a tree has that anxiety. But we human beings, we are victims of that anxiety. That's part of the human problem. We try not to think about it, to think about our death. We try to be busy we try to think of other things. But deeply we know that one day we will have to die. It means we will pass from the realm of being into the realm of non-being. Be careful. So we believe that's a way of thinking. It has to do with wrong view or right view. So the segment from B to D, BD, represent your sojourn on earth, your lifespan. And from D, you pass from the realm of being to non-being again. And that's the way we think. And the Buddha described that thinking as wrong thinking. And what he proposed is right thinking. Right thought. Right thought, right thinking is one of the eight elements of the Noble Path. And as a practitioner, we have to cultivate, to practice right thinking. And if we do not have right view, we cannot practice right thinking. Suppose we meditate on a cloud, about the birth and the death of a cloud. For us who have been in the retreat, this is easy. When you do not see your beloved cloud in the sky anymore, you might have the tendency to cry. You think that your cloud has passed from the realm of being into non-being. Where is my beloved cloud now? I miss you. Why have you left me? Why you have passed from the realm of being into non-being? But looking deeply with mindfulness and concentration, we discover that it is impossible for a cloud to die. It is impossible for a cloud to pass from the realm of being into non-being. A cloud can become rain, snow, or hail, or water vapor, or anything. But it is impossible for a cloud to become nothing. That is the truth. And scientists have to agree with us. So the nature of the cloud is the nature of no birth, no death. The cloud has not come from the realm of non-being. But before being a cloud, she had been something else. And looking into the cloud, we know where she has come from, our cloud. She has come from the water in the ocean, the heat generated by the sun, and many other elements. So it's very clear that our cloud has not come from non-being. And scientists agree with us that the nature of the cloud is the nature of no birth, no death, no beginning, no ending. A French scientist whose name is Lavoisier said very much the same thing as in the Heart Sutra. The Heart Sutra is about great understanding, Mahaprajna Paramita Heart Sutra. Heart Sutra means the sutra on great wisdom reduced in its smallest form. The kernel of the teaching. So looking deeply into the nature of a cloud, we discover something. A cloud can never die. A cloud is never born. The moment she appears as a cloud is only a moment of continuation, not a beginning. There is no beginning. There is no ending. So next time when we celebrate his birthday, instead of singing happy birthday to you, we should sing happy continuation day to you. And that's closer to the truth. And if we touch the nature of no birth and no death, we realize that being and non-being are just notions. Because our cloud has not come from the realm of being, a non-being, to the realm of being, and will not leave the realm of being in order to the realm of non-being. Suppose we do a little meditation on the flame. We know that the flame is somewhere there. Do we think that the realm, our flame, the flame that we expect to manifest, belong to the realm of non-being? We don't see the flame, and we are waiting for the birth of a flame. And usually we think that the flame is now in the realm of non-being, and we will help her to come to the realm of being. We are still caught in the notion of being and non-being. My dear little flame, where are you now? Are you in the realm of non-being? She is silent. We know that the flame is already there in her conditions. We know that the conditions for the appearance of the flame are sufficient. The flame is hidden in the box, and the flame is hidden outside of the box. We know that oxygen is crucial for the appearance of the flame. And when we ask, my dear little flame, we know you are somewhere there. Why don't you manifest for us? It seems that conditions are sufficient for you, my dear little flame, to manifest yourself. And you can hear the flame saying something like, dear Thay, dear Sangha, I am ready to manifest. Help me, I need only one last condition, which is the movement of your finger. And the flame manifests. My dear little flame, have you come from the realm of non-being? She's smiling at us. My dear little flame, are you going to leave us and go back to the realm of non-being? She's smiling. So this is about the being and the non-being of the flame. Now let us ask, my dear little flame, where have you come from? Have you come from the realm of non-being? And if you listen carefully with mindfulness and concentration, you can hear an answer something like this. Dear Thayadi Sangha, I have come from nowhere. I have not come from the south, not from the north, not from the east, not from the west. When conditions are sufficient, I manifest myself. My nature is non-local, non-locality. And we know that she is telling us the truth. Her true nature is no birth, no death, no here, no there. Her nature is non-local. When conditions are sufficient, she manifests beautifully. And when conditions are no longer sufficient, she just stops her manifestation and manifest in other ways. If our cloud no longer manifests herself as a cloud, she manifests herself as the rain. And when you cry because you don't see your beloved cloud anymore, your cloud in her new form is calling you, darling, darling, I'm here. Don't you see me? And if you see your cloud in the rain, you stop crying. Because to be a cloud floating up there is beautiful. But to be the rain falling on the vegetation is equally beautiful. And the nature of your beloved is the nature of no birth and no death. She is no longer in her usual form, in the form that you used to recognize her. But that does not mean that she has passed from the realm of being into the realm of non-being. Your grief, your despair has no basis. And that is the kind of wisdom, the kind of right view that can liberate you from your grief and your despair. She has left. He has left us. But that does not mean they have passed from the realm of being into non-being. We have to look again. And that is why right view is a kind of insight that can liberate. To believe that God is in the realm of being, it's kind of reductionism. Because God is the ultimate, transcending both the notion of being and non-being, birth and death. You cannot talk about the birth of God or the death of God. You cannot talk about the being of God and the non-being of God. Notions like birth and death, being and non-being, coming and going, cannot be ascribed to God. In fact, it cannot be ascribed to the flame, to our flame or to our cloud. The true nature of the cloud is the nature of no birth, no death, no coming, no going, no being, no non-being. When conditions come, something appear, you qualify it as being. And when conditions are no longer sufficient, you cannot see it in that form anymore, you describe it as belonging to the non-being. But in fact, our cloud, our flame, are free from all these notions, being and non-being, birth and death. And that is what we can get through the practice of looking deeply into the nature of what is there. Meditation is to use mindfulness, concentration, and look deep into the nature of what is. And out of that, we can get the kind of insight that liberates us from fear, despair, anger, and so on. So how many theologians have spent their time, their ink, their saliva to discuss whether God exists or not exists? The problem of being and non-being of God. We are caught. And even scientists of our time are still caught in the notion of being and non-being. They believe that there is a time when the cosmos did not exist, and that is why they are searching for the beginning of the cosmos, the birth of the cosmos. That is why they have offer theory like the Big Bang, meaning that before the Big Bang there is no cosmos. And they are thinking of the Big Crunch, after that the cosmos ceased to exist. So theologians and even scientists are still caught in the notion of being and non-being. And the Buddha told Katyayana very clearly, people in the world, they are caught either by the notion of being or the notion of non-being. That is why they suffer so much. They have wrong views. And right view is the kind of insight that helps us to get rid of these notions of birth and death, coming and going, being and non-being. There is a teaching, Buddhist teaching on relativity also. It's called Tương Đại. It's very close to symmetry. If you have the notion of birth, and then naturally you have the notion of death. If you have the notion of above, and then you automatically have the notion of below. And in the mind of discrimination, we always want to choose between one of the two. We want to choose only life. We want to ban death. We want to retain only happiness. We want to ban suffering. We want to keep only the lotus. We want to ban the mud. And we describe the kingdom of God is a place where there is only happiness. There is no suffering. But happiness and suffering, they inter are. If there is no suffering, there is no happiness. And we just discuss about true love. True love, compassion is born from understanding. If there is no understanding, there is no love. And understanding first means understanding of the suffering. It is the understanding of suffering that allow compassion to arise. It is exactly because thanks to the mud that the lotus can arise. So there is a deep connection between suffering and happiness. Where there is no mud, there is no lotus. So if there is no suffering, there is no happiness. So the definition of the kingdom of God is not a place where there is no suffering. In the kingdom of God, there is suffering. But people know how to make good use of the suffering in order to create the lotus of happiness. So a good practitioner is someone who knows how to handle suffering. If you are an organic gardener, you never want to throw the garbage away because you know how to make good use of the garbage, to make compost and nourish the flowers and the vegetables. So a good practitioner knows how to handle and happiness and suffering. And if she knows how to handle suffering, she knows how to handle happiness. So we do not discriminate against suffering anymore. We do not discriminate against the other side of the truth, which is death, because birth and death, they coexist. They interact. Without death, there is no birth. Without left, there is no right. We know that if we are politically on the left, we should not wish for the right to disappear forever. because if the right disappear, we disappear. Looking deeply into our body, we see birth and death happening in every moment. And thanks to the dying of cells, new cells can be born. Not only birth is a miracle, but death is a miracle. The miracle of death, of dying, allow the miracle of birth to take place. In this very moment, there are cells that are dying in our body. Death is there in the here and the now, which makes it possible for life. We cannot remove death and hope only to retain life. That is discrimination, discriminative thinking. That's not right view. There are many cells dying this moment, but we don't have enough time to organize funerals for them. There are many new cells born, but we have no time to celebrate their birthday. So we are experiencing birth and death every moment of our life. Why should we be afraid of dying? In our wrong thinking, we think that is not now, that is later. For 40 years, 50 years, 100 years later. That's wrong perception. Birth is now and death is now. Life is now and death is now. And all of us are experiencing birth and death every moment. We have to touch that fact. In fact, in our body, not only we have ourselves, but there are a lot of cells of other living beings in us. We coexist as a huge community, and there is a harmony. And birth and death take place in every millisecond. We are experiencing birth and death now. And it is joyful to ride on the waves of birth and death. You don't need to be a bodhisattva in order to stand majestically on the waves of birth and death. You are riding on birth and death in every moment. And why are you afraid of dying? You think death is something that will happen only at the end of the road. But the Buddha said, where there is death, there is birth also, the life also. So let us not to be afraid of dying, because we are experiencing dying right here and right now. And as a practitioner, we have to look deeply to see the things that other people cannot see and get rid of our fear, our anger, our despair. We should not try to grasp a being and try to run away from non-being, because that is a wrong perception. To be caught in the notion of being and non-being, we can create a lot of fear, anger, and despair. And in Buddhist teaching, being and non-being are just notions, cannot be applied to reality. And Lavoisier, the French scientist, said that nothing is born, nothing dies. You know, he's not a Buddhist. Rien ne se crée, rien ne se perd. And you have not come from the realm of non-being into the realm of being. And you will not pass from the realm of being into non-being. Remove all these notions and you have freedom. And that freedom is nirvana, available in the here and the now. Nirvana is our true nature, the nature of no birth, no death, no being, no non-being. Our anxiety, the anxiety that mankind has suffered for centuries, come from the notion, from the fear of non-being. But in this teaching and practice, to be or not to be, that's not the question. So when you have right view, you are free from all discrimination. Discrimination against non-being, discrimination against suffering, discrimination against death, discrimination against the mud, the garbage. A flower is on her way to the heap of garbage. But the garbage is on her way back to a flower. The essential is that you are a good organic gardener. And you know how to transform the garbage back into vegetable and flower again. There's no fear. So cultivating right view liberate us. And when we think on the base of right view. Thinking, right thinking, is thinking in the line of non-discrimination against the left and right, above and below, suffering and happiness. We transcend all pairs of opposite, being, non-being, coming, going, birth, death. And if we think based on right view, our thinking will be characterized by understanding and compassion. There is no more separation, discrimination, hate, anger, fear. And every one of us as practitioner should be able to produce a thought in the line of right thinking. A thought that carries the element of understanding and compassion, non-discrimination. We know that a thought filled with hate, anger, can destroy ourselves, destroy our health, our body, our mind, and destroy the world. So let us learn to think in such a way that will not produce hate, fear, anger, discrimination. And that is called right thinking by the Buddha. Right thinking is thinking in the direction of understanding, compassion, non-discrimination. And every time you produce a thought of compassion, right thinking, it begins to heal us and heal the world. And a good practitioner can produce a right thought several times a day. By just thinking, by practicing right thinking, we heal the world, we heal ourselves. The kind of thinking that is free from discrimination, therefore from fear, anger, and despair. And when we have right view, we can also practice right speech. We can say something in the line of non-discrimination. Remember, true love is the love without exclusiveness. True love includes everyone, everything. No discrimination. So to say something in the line of right speech means there is no discrimination in what you say. There is no hate, no fear, no anger. There is only understanding and compassion. And when the other person hears that, he or she feels wonderful. And when you are able to produce, to say something compassionate, loving, without discrimination, you feel wonderful after you have been able to say it. Write him a letter. Write her a letter full of compassion, full of understanding, and that letter begin to heal you. And heal him, heal the world. An act of healing, right speech. And you can do that several times a day to several people. And that is how we build a world, a society of harmony, of peace. We have available that kind of practice that enable us to produce thoughts of compassion and non-discrimination. They can help us produce speech in the line of non-discrimination and compassion that can be highly healing and transforming and nourishing. Why don't we do it today? We have the capacity to think like that and to say things like that. And we make good use of our time in order to practice compassion and understanding that will heal us and heal the world. And then we come to right action. Right action is what the things you do with your physical body that has the power to protect, to save, to support, to help. This has to do with the first mindfulness training to protect life, to help people suffer less, to help living beings suffer less. And again, what we can do with our body should reflect our right view. No discrimination, no separation, no hate, no fear. And everything we do will be love, will be an expression of love. So having a right view in us, anything we think, anything we say, anything we do will only help, heal, and transform. And that is why right view is so essential. And right view is a product of mindfulness and concentration. And the five mindfulness trainings help us to live our daily life in mindfulness and concentration. That will promote right view. And then we have right livelihood. And right decisions. In a Dhamma talk given earlier, we have discussed about the four aspects of the practice of true diligence. The practice selective watering of the seeds in us. So we don't have to repeat it today. And right livelihood is also something that can be understood in the light of right view. We select the kind of livelihood that can express our intention to help, to serve, that can help us realize our ideal of compassion and help preserve our beautiful planet. To me, the kingdom of God is our planet. And God is our planet. And we belong to the kingdom. We are part of the work of God. It's here and now. Do not go and look for God elsewhere. When you get in touch with this wonderful flower, you know this belongs to the kingdom. And touching the flower deeply enough with mindfulness and concentration, you touch the kingdom of God. And you touch God. Do not look for God elsewhere. Do not look for the Buddha, the Pure Land of Buddha elsewhere. It's right here. Our planet is the kingdom of God, is the Pure Land of the Buddha. And we have the duty to preserve it with our mindfulness and concentration and compassion. Action can be viewed as having three aspects. Not only physical movement, physical action is action. You can help, protect, save with your body. But you can help heal, protect, and save with your speech. So talking, speaking, writing is also action. If you say something mean, something wrong, what you say can make a person suffer and she can go and commit suicide. So that action is awful. But if you say something full of love and reveal a way out, that may save the life of a person. So to say things is also action. And you can help save, help many people by our practice of right speech. And thinking is action. If you do not do right thinking, the wrong thinking may push you to commit suicide or to kill other people. So thinking is already action. And in the Buddhist tradition, action has three aspects: body, speech, and mind. And we can assure, we can practice so that our thinking, our speech, and our action are in line of right view. So we can assure a beautiful future for us and for the world. Who are we? That is the question. Who am I? The answer is very clear. You are your action. You are your action. You are not something outside of your action. You are your action by itself. And action in Buddhism, the word action in Sanskrit is karma. Yep. You are what you think. You are what you say. You are what you do. Outside of your action, there is no you anymore. You cannot find a self out of that. And if we act on the ground of right view, we continue beautifully. Let us visualize an orange tree. The orange tree standing in the backyard, she's producing beautiful leaves, beautiful blossoms, beautiful oranges. And these are the orange tree. And we also are a kind of tree. Every day we produce thought, speech, and action. And that is the things that will continue us. When you produce a thought, that thought is your continuation. That thought will never die. It will never pass from the realm of being into the realm of non-being. When you say something, there's your signature in it. You cannot say that, "I did not say it. I did not produce that thought." It's your thought. It's your speech. It's your movement, your action. You have your signature in it. You cannot deny. And that is your continuation. It never lost. It never get lost. So when this body disintegrates, you continue always. You are not only this body. You have produced thought, speech, and action. And you continue with that. That is your karma. And you can continue beautifully if you know how to base your action on right view. The French philosopher Descartes and Jean-Paul Sartre existentialism, he said something very close to it. He said, man is the sum of his action. L'homme est la somme de ses actes. Man is the sum de ses actes, of his action. Who are you? You are the totality of your action. You are your thinking, you are your speech, you are your action. And it is possible for you to die like a cloud. You continue always, more or less beautifully. It depends on your way of producing thought, speech, and action. And a good practitioner knows how to produce a beautiful thought of compassion, understanding. She knows how to produce a beautiful speech of compassion and non-discrimination. And happiness is possible. The transformation of suffering is possible with the practice of right thinking, right speech, and right action. Is a guided meditation practice that I would like to transmit to you, my dear friends. It's very easy and pleasant. You can use this guided meditation for walking, for sitting, for breathing. And you know that the Buddha is in you in the form of seed. There is the capacity to be joyful, to be happy, to be forgiving. So you invite the Buddha to sit and to breathe with you. I invite the Buddha to breathe. And invite the Buddha to sit. I don't have to breathe. I don't have to sit. And when you invite the Buddha to breathe, he breathes right away. When you invite him to sit, he sits right away. But look at the way he's breathing. The Buddha knows how to breathe very gently. And he follows his in-breath, and he enjoys his in-breath. And he sit upright, very relaxed. The quality of sitting, the quality of breathing of the Buddha is perfect. That is why we should invite the Buddha in us to do the breathing and the sitting for us. And we enjoy that quality of breathing and sitting. Let the Buddha breathe. Let the Buddha sit. I don't have to breathe. I don't have to sit. We begin like that. There is a Buddha and there is me. Very human. And then next, Buddha is breathing. Buddha is sitting. I enjoy breathing. I enjoy sitting. Because the quality of breathing and sitting is very high. So I enjoy. And you can continue and continue with that line. It's very pleasant and nourishing. Buddha is breathing. Buddha is sitting. I enjoy the breathing. I enjoy the sitting. And then later on, you might like to continue like this. The Buddha is the breathing. The Buddha is the sitting. I am only the breathing. I am only the sitting. You recognize the Buddha because of the quality of the breathing. You recognize the Buddha because of the quality of sitting. There is no Buddha outside of the breathing. There is no Buddha outside of the sitting. In the gospel, you read the story of the three men who walked with Jesus during the night, and they did not know it is Jesus. That is after the crucifixion. And when they come to an inn and share dinner together, the way the other person break the bread and pour the wine help them to know that it is Jesus. So you recognize Buddha because of the quality of breathing and of sitting. Buddha is the breathing. The Buddha is the sitting. Outside of that, there is no Buddha. We are only our action. Out of our action, there is no us. I am the breathing. I am the sitting. There is no breather. There is no sitter. There is only the breathing and the sitting. There is breathing. There is sitting. There is no one breathing. There is no one sitting. The sitting and the breathing is karma, is you. And you continue with your action. When you say the wind blows, it's very funny. Because if it's not blowing, it's not the wind. Blowing is the wind. There's no blower outside of the wind. When you say it's raining, it's also funny. There's no rainer. If the rain does not fall, it's not rain. So the rain is the falling. The wind is the blowing. Outside of action, there is no actor. There is action, but there is no actor. So let us not imagine that after the dissolution of this body, ourselves disappear. We cease to exist. There is always a continuation, a condition in the form of action. We continue always. If it is impossible for a cloud to die, it's impossible for you, for me to die. And therefore, there's a way to continue beautifully, cultivating right view and compassion and understanding. Peace is the breathing. Joy is the sitting. Peace while breathing. Joy while sitting. Peace is the breathing. Joy is the sitting. There is no peace and no joy outside of the breathing and the sitting. So this guided meditation is simple, but it's very deep. And practicing that, you can experience a lot of joy. And you can get rid of the notion of a separate self, existing outside of your action. I think people like Jean-Paul Sartre, he did not practice Buddhist meditation, but he learned from his observation and suffering, and he knew that man, the human being, is only his action. There is no actor, there is only action. And action is karma. It continues always and it can continue beautifully also. The Buddha had a very dear lay disciple. It's him who offered the Buddha a practice center in the city of Vaishali. The moment when he hear the word Buddha, he fall in love with the Buddha right away. And he invite the Buddha to come to his country and teach. And he offer a park he bought from a prince for the Buddha to make a practice center. And he took a great deal of pleasure and happiness serving the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. He's very generous. He's a businessman. He devoted a lot of time and material resources to help the poor people in his country. And that is why they gave him a beautiful name, Anathapindika, means the one who takes care of the destitute. Destitute people, the lonely people, the poor people. And as a businessman, one time he suffered bankruptcy, but he didn't suffer because he had so many friends that came to help him rebuild his business. And he's a good practitioner. He came to the Jeta Path and listened to a Dhamma talk every fortnight. And his family is a practicing family. One day the Buddha learned that he's dying. So he went to visit Anathapindika. And after that he asked his beloved disciple Shariputra to continue visiting Anathapindika and help him to die peacefully. So that day, Shariputra learned that Anathapindika was agonizing. So he asked his younger brother in the Dharma, the Venerable Ananda, a cousin of the Buddha, to come with him and help. When they came, Anathapindika was too weak to stand up, to sit up. He was dying. And Shariputra said, "Dear friend, just stay there. We will bring a few chairs close to you and talk to you." And when the monks are seated, Shariputra asked, "Dear friend, how do you feel in your body? Is the pain in your body decreasing? Do you suffer less in your body?" And Anathapindika said, "Dear Venerable, it does not seem that the pain in me is decreasing. It is increasing." And when Shariputra heard that, he said, "In that case, let us together practice this guided meditation. Let us practice mindfulness, recollection of the three jewels. I'm breathing in, I'm aware that the Buddha is there, full of compassion, understanding, and the teacher of gods and men, helping many people to suffer less. Breathing out, I'm aware of the Dharma that can help people recover, liberate from fear, and so on." Shariputra is one of the most intelligent monks. He knew that if Anathapindika focuses attention on the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, and then he gets in touch with the beautiful seeds in him, he had taken a great deal of pleasure serving the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And every time he hear about the Buddha, his eyes shine. So it's very intelligent to focus the attention of the man on the object of his love. So after 5-6 minutes of practice of mindfulness on the three jewels, Anattabhidhikkha suffered less. He did not focus on the pain anymore. And he focused on the three jewels. And he was able to smile. He got a relief from the practice. And then Shariputra said, let us continue. Breathing in, I see the element water in my body. Breathing out, I smile to the element water in my body. Breathing in, I'm aware of the element water outside of my body. Breathing out, I smile to the element of water outside of my body. Breathing in, I am aware of the element air in my body. The air outside of my body. The element of earth in my body. The element of earth out of my body. The element of heat in my body. The element of heat outside of my body. Breathing in, I'm aware of my eyes. Breathing out, I smile to my eyes. Breathing in, I am aware of my body. Breathing out, I smile to my body. Breathing in, I know that my body manifests when conditions are sufficient. Breathing out, I know that my body disintegrates when conditions are no longer sufficient. I know that my body has come from nowhere. My body will go nowhere. Breathing in, I'm not just my body. I'm not caught by my body. My feelings, my perceptions, my mental formations, my consciousness. Breathing in, I know that my body manifests when conditions are sufficient. I'm not this body. I'm more than this body. I am my action. I have done many things wonderful, and I continue with my good action. And the guided meditation help Anattabhidhikkha to touch the nature of no birth and no death, no coming and no going, no being and none, no non-being. Breathing in, I know that my body has not come from non-being into being. Breathing out, I know that my body does not come from, will not pass from the realm of being into non-being. Guided meditation in the line of the teaching this morning. And after 15 minutes, Ananda, the Venerable Ananda, saw the tears running down the cheeks of Anattabhidhikkha. Ananda was surprised. He asked, dear friend, why do you cry? Do you regret anything? And with a faint smile, Anattabhidhikkha said, Venerable Ananda, no, I don't regret anything. You don't succeed in your meditation? No, I do very well. A wonderful meditation. Why are you crying then? Venerable Ananda, I cry because I am so moved. I have served the Buddha and the Sangha more than 30 years, but I have never received such a wonderful teaching and practice. I feel free now. I'm so happy. I'm released. I'm no longer afraid of anything. Ananda said, dear friend, you don't know. But this kind of teaching, we monks and nuns, we receive from the Buddha, our teacher, almost every day. The teaching of no birth, no death, no coming, no going. Anattapindika said, "Dear Venerables, please go home and tell the Lord that many of us lay practitioners are so busy, we do not have the time to receive and practice this wonderful teaching. But there are those of us who have enough time and conditions to receive this teaching and practice. So please tell the Lord that we lay practitioners, many of us, wish to receive this teaching and practice also. And that is the last request from the lay practitioner Anattapindika. And the Venerable Ananda said, "Dear friend, I promise I will go back and tell the Lord about this." And the Lord will offer this dispense, this teaching to lay practitioners. And after that, the lay person Anattapindika passed away very peacefully with a smile on his face. This story is recorded in a sutra called "The Teaching Given to the Dying Person," available in the Shanti Book of Plum Village. You might like to read and study it again. And if it happened that you are to help a person dying peacefully, and then you can do the way of Sariputra, you can offer a guided meditation. 3-4 of you are sitting there, and together you breathe and you offer the collective energy of mindfulness and concentration, and helping the dying person to do it easily. And everyone can do that. Shall we invite the children to come and sing a song? No coming, no going. It's wonderful to have had a chance to spend together in Deer Park. We wish that the retreat be longer. But there will be a retreat for Vietnamese-speaking people. You might like to join if you can afford the time. And each of you, please remember that you are all a cell in the Buddha body. Let's not wait for the Buddha. The Buddha is already there. If we behave as a cell in the Buddha body, and then the Buddha is available for us. And let us be the Buddha for the sake of the world. Let us practice as a good cell in the body of the Buddha, generating mindfulness, concentration, and insight. And that's what we can do, all of us. Monastics, members of the Order of Interbeing, please come up here. Members of the OI, everyone is invited to massage our feet and stand up and hold hands.
Dear Sangha, while we're waiting, please allow me to make the last announcements before I have no more chance. So we will be emailing everyone an evaluation survey, and we would love to hear from you. And if you could just please fill it out, it would make our lives better. And for the shuttle announcement, For all of our friends who need a shuttle to the airport, please meet in the parking lot down there. And once again, we would like to ask for your support by helping us clean your rooms and your dorms. And for all of the families of the work families, please help us with your job one last time. So if it's washing up or the dining hall, the recycling, the compost, and the toilets, we would really appreciate if you can help us one last time. And for all the monastic staff and friends that are available, we will also have a working meditation at 4 p.m., and we will gather in front of the pepper tree near the dining hall. And unfortunately, we cannot extend any stays because the monastery will be closed from this evening until the 16th, which is the arrival day for the Vietnamese retreat. So only the monastics and the retreatant staffs, only the monastics and the staff will continue to stay on. And we thank you for your understanding and support by departing this afternoon as planned. And after we leave this hall, before you leave this hall, please help us by putting your cushions and mats to the side of the hall as usual.
The monthly pledge, if you like to give us a handful of rice, like I asked yesterday, don't forget to put in the box. Yesterday we leave some box to two sides of meditation. So we have to start. No coming, no going, no after, no before. I hold you close to me. I release you to be so free, because I am in you and you are in me, because I am in you and you are in me. No coming, no going, no before. I hold you close to me. I release you to be so free, because I am in you and you are in me, because I am in you and you are in me. Happy continuation. Please write home mindfully.
So, dear friends, we still have four friends who have not received their certificate for the five mindfulness trainings. I'd like to ask if Christopher Johnston, Diane Ngol, Claire Heinzelman, and Trish Haas, if you could please meet me outside where we sell the Lotus cards. I have your certificates.
One more thing, dear friends. Just want to remind you, I understand some didn't quite get our message yesterday that Ty will be visiting Washington, D.C. in the final week of October of our tour and doing a retreat for Congress. So please visit our website, plumvillage.org, for more information and how you can support us. Thank you.
And I'm sorry, for the five mindfulness trainings, there's also another certificate for Burke Denman. And the remaining members of the long-eared owl family will be meeting at the same place that they've practiced their song last night. Once again, the long-eared owl family. Thank you.
Dear friends, if you would like, Joe Riley and I will be giving a little concert, either...